Okay, so let's just close your eyes. Okay, it's like, almost like you're, you know, opening a book, right? the page opens to the recollection of a joyful moment. Just, you know, how that felt in your body. Kind of like you're almost like you're able to re-experience it, yet also like you're watching a movie. And you can see the surroundings. And then when you're already opening your eyes. So it's quite nice, don't you reckon? Okay? It's such an emotional concern. Everyone think of something? Yeah. So was it a really big thing? Or was it a little thing? It's a little thing. So the thing is, some of you have done this with me before. I know lots of you haven't though. What I've noticed, and maybe you found this as well from if you have done it before, is that it's often a small thing. Whereas what can happen to us, I don't know, the way maybe we've been, you know, this idea of Krishnamurti is that we've been conditioned. So maybe it's our conditioning, or maybe it's our it's the way we, you know, think about things. Is that often we feel like we have to have some big event, you know, like as if I'll be happy when this some big thing happens or something finishes, right? It's just that when we actually ask, you know, recollect moments of happiness. They are usually not big things, right? So we can take from this the obvious, like let's enjoy the small moments of life a little bit more. I mean, I believe that's why there's this huge, huge kind of like growth in psychology about mindfulness. Because that's really what mindfulness is, right? It's just paying attention. Because if you consider that experience you just recollecting, is that, were you mindful? Yes. You know, were you present? Yes. Were you thinking about that you should be doing something else? No. Right? Was there a degree of contentment? Yes. Right? It was just that, you know, you were fully present, right? You weren't thinking that, say if it was with someone else, you weren't thinking that they should change in some way, were you? No. You weren't thinking you should change in some way, right? So those things that we can often do, where we go into those little patterns, they're actually like kind of guaranteeing unhappiness for us when we're thinking someone else should change or we should change or everything's not right or blah, 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 blah. And so when we're just actually let ourselves experience life as it is, which is what happened, I would guess, in those moments that you remembered, there's this natural joy. And while that just seems so obvious, and so therefore you could just say, well, so just do that all the time. You know, how come we don't? You know, maybe we've like actually sort of bought a belief that isn't true. And I think one of the beliefs that some of us have bought that isn't true is the idea that if we really suffer, then it will work out better. Do you see what I mean? Like, as if if we really like try so hard, then we'll kind of get what we want. Do you know? Like in America, they say hustle. And the, I don't know, is there an Australian term for it? I don't know if there's really an expression in Australia saying this hustle, is it?
Hustle.
Yeah, but that's really an Americanism, isn't it? We don't really have an Australian expression.
Squeaky being squeaky wheel, which isn't quite the same.
Yeah.
Still is.
Yeah. I'll ask my dad, he's good at Australian expressions. But anyway, this thing of like, as if we try harder, then we'll get what we want. And as if the happiness is over there, right, through achieving something, which we just worked out is probably not the case, right? But what the teaching in yoga is that, and it's natural that we have an aspiration for growth. So don't get me wrong, it's not that we don't want to grow. It's important that we kind of tend to and cultivate growth. You know, we're constantly changing, and so it's not to say that we're trying to like stop ourselves from that, right? it's the recognition that there is this good aspiration for growth. And someone who's very depressed, they have no aspiration for growth. Do you see what I mean? It's like just, you know, right? See what I mean? So it's actually very, very, very important that we do have that aspiration for growth. What I'm trying to say is that growth comes when we are joyful. It doesn't come after we've suffered. I don't mean that probably doesn't make sense, because we can certainly have pain. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying pleasure and pain as if that's equivalent to the joyfulness. Do you get me? So pleasure, I'm saying, is different to joyfulness, and I'm saying that pain is different as well. So can we imagine just taking that sort of out of the equation for a moment? Because we can have joy even through pain, like when you have a baby, right? When you give birth, right? So I'm not saying that life won't give us, that there won't be painful experiences, but what I'm trying to get at is that the teaching in yoga is that the suffering that we put on is the problem. It's not the pain that's the problem. It's not the pleasure that's the problem, right? It's the suffering that we put on it because we're like trying to like make it not how it is that is the problem. Do you get what I'm trying to say? And I hope I'm being clear. I feel like it's a little bit confusing, but my main point is that it's like cultivate the joy, cultivate the presence, cultivate the good experience, the good state within you as most important, as that's what really, really, really matters, and then there is the possibility of growth. Does that make sense? If you even just think of like with a plant, right? Plants grow when they've got good conditions for the growth. And then they can't not. And that's the same for you. You can't not grow when you have tended to your conditions. Does that make sense? And so that's why it's so important. I'm so glad that you've come to class, because when we actually like sadhana, our practice, when we put the time into our practice, and you know, an hour a day really isn't that much to ask, you know. But see how sometimes we think that it is, you know? Sometimes it like gets pushed aside for all the other stuff, and then all the other stuff can overwhelm us. Anyone ever feel like that? And then we're not feeling like we don't feel present, we don't feel love. We start hating everyone, right? And we think it's all their fault. Right? But do you see what I'm trying to get at? So what my suggestion is, and I hope that every moment in your life is so joyful, right? If you find that it's not, if you're finding that you're getting like a bit like, I don't know, stressed out or bothered, instead of trying to tend to the thing that you think you've got to like fix up, tend to looking after yourself first. Get yourself right. My dad calls it mojo. And he says, you've got to look after your mojo, Tam. He goes, that's what matters more than anything. Whenever I start like, oh, don't, you know, because if anyone has had a business, it's like quite a lot having a business, right? You know, put it all aside. You've got to get into your namaste, Tam. He's right. It's so true, though, right? That's just what I'm sharing with you. So when you're ready, let's get into our namaste. Okay, so just like tend into your inner environment, your inner universe. And can you just pay attention now to your own heart beating? Your own precious breath. And you see how this is not possibly selfish. So some of us have had, and it's another kind of belief we might have taken on, which isn't a true one, which is as if it's selfish to do this, but it's really not. To tend inwardly to help you to feel that love and kindness within you it's only helpful for everyone else as well. You know that, because if you think in your family, if there's someone who, you know, that, say for example, there's someone that you just always just feel so light when you're around, and you just like look forward to seeing them, you know, you always have a good laugh with them, or just feel really connected with them in some way. They actually make you feel good. And there's possibility that there may have been people in the course of your life that were the opposite, that you would avoid. Or if you couldn't avoid them, you'd just start to feel crap. So we are affected by others' energy, which also equals you affect others with your energy. So that's why, you know, when we practice this, with the figure eight pathway, for example, we'll start now. As you're breathing in, draw your awareness from mula to the clavicle notch, and then around to bindu at the back of the skull, and up to the crown to Brahmarandra, and into the midbrain, down from your crown of your head, inwards from your forehead. And exhale from there, C7 in the neck, and down the spine, all the way down each vertebra to the sacrum, tailbone, back to mula. And just balance these constituents of nature within you, rajas and tamas. Tending to the uplifting force that you can feel on the in-breath and the pacifying force that you can experience in the out-breath. So to bring yourself into harmony and equilibrium. So just trace through that figure eight pathway three more times. And bring your palms together at your chest and set to your intention. And join together for one on one.